Here we go. What? Is it okay? Okay. Here we go. So we are going to talk about the Chacham Tzvi, whose name was Rav Tzvi Ashkenaz. The main tshuva we're going to learn about today is, of course, the tshuva about Yom Tov Sheni. But first, let me just give you a little bit of background about who he was and where he lived and what he did. Anybody know anything about him? Anybody heard of him before?
Yeah.
You heard of him?
Yeah.
Okay, good. He was a very, very famous rav, obviously. If you look at the little box here, so I wrote that he was born in 1656 in Moravia. Anybody heard of Moravia before?
Yeah.
It does not exist today, but anybody know sort of where it is? Not exactly. Czech Republic. Okay, that's basically part of what's today called the Czech Republic. In those days was known as Moravia. Okay, he was born there. His father was a rav there. He died in 1718 in Lvov, in the Poland area. He moved around a lot. Okay, basically when he was growing up, he grew up a little bit in Moravia, and then he was sent away to yeshiva, first in Salonika. Anybody heard of Salonika?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a section of Greece. Okay, he learned there for a while, and then afterwards he spent some time in Constantinople, okay, which is a big city in Turkey. It's changed names a few times, okay, Constantinople. Definitely it's not a city called that today. But that was, I think today that's Istanbul, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But that's where he spent a lot of time learning before he went out to start taking positions as a rabbi. What's interesting about both of those two places is, anybody know? What are they? What type of Jews live there?
Sephardic.
Okay, he grew up, he was Ashkenazi. Now, think about it for a second. I don't know what his original name was, but he was actually called Tzvi Ashkenazi because he came from an Ashkenaz land. Again, I don't know if that was his original name that he was born with, but certainly when he went to, the Sephardic, Salonika and Turkey, presumably he was called Ashkenazi because everybody else there was Sephardi. He came from an Ashkenaz land. And when he got a smicha from Turkey, they started calling him the Chacham Tzvi. Why did they call him the Chacham Tzvi? Exactly, the Sephardim call their rabbis Chacham. Okay, so that's the name of his tshuvos, but the point is he was already called Chacham Tzvi when he got smicha at a very early age. I think he was not more than 20, maybe even earlier, maybe even 18 when he got smicha. Very, very young. He was, again, obviously brilliant. Very knowledgeable. But they already called him Chacham Tzvi, or Tzvi Ashkenazi, when he got a smicha, and that's what he later labeled, his shalos of tshuvos. He called him Chacham Tzvi. You have a question already? I barely said anything yet.
Question.
Okay. So originally Ashkenazi often did refer to Germany. That area of the Czech Republic in those days was considered maybe to be part of it. But basically the word Ashkenaz often got expanded from just being Germany to the greater Ashkenazi community in Europe. Yeah. Correct. Even though originally you're right, the Ashkenazim was really basically Germany. That's what it was called. Was Ashkenaz.
And also, did he take on
Sephardim
and
Hagim? No, he was very knowledgeable about Sephardim and Hagim, and that's why later in his life he actually served as a rabbi in a number of Sephardic communities. But he himself, as far as I don't know if he took on the Minhagim himself, but he certainly didn't say that he was Sephardi. He just was very knowledgeable about them. He was able to rule for Sephardim on for Sephardi halacha. That's for sure. So afterwards, he lived in a few different places. He got married at some point, and he lived in where did he live originally? He got married, I think he went back to his hometown, and he got married to somebody, I forgot who, somebody in his hometown, where he came from, and he was actually going to be running one of the shuls there. And then unfortunately one of the wars broke out, and basically he had to flee, and unfortunately his wife and his young daughter were killed by a cannon shot that hit his home or something like that. So basically he fled. He had to run away. He stayed alive, but he had to run away. And he came to, the first place he came to, I think, was Sarajevo, the capital of Bosnia. And there, actually, maybe that's where it was. Now I'm already getting confused. I forgot already. That's where he had to run away from, or the next place. I didn't write it down, unfortunately. I apologize. But at some point, he was in Sarajevo, right, shortly afterwards. Later, basically, he came to another part of Germany. Okay, he came to, I think it was Altoona. Which is basically one city in Germany. And basically he had to get remarried, and he started there. He basically started another shul, like another base medrash, something called the Kloys, okay, which is a place where, the Ashkenazi name, the Yiddish name for a place where people used to learn. So he used to be, he basically ran, that base medrash, which was sort of like, at least one or two shuls together. And then after that, they knew that he was, he was already very knowledgeable, so the shul there basically wanted him to be the rabbi of the big shul in town. The problem was there was another candidate. So basically, people, basically trying to get the other candidate to get him. In the end, they agreed to have a compromise that he would serve 6 months and the other candidate would serve 6 months. Now, unfortunately, eventually he had to leave. What was the Chacham Tzvi's problem? This is an interesting historical point. The Chacham Tzvi apparently didn't like money. Okay, he like, you know, money, couldn't care less about money. Obviously, he needed a little bit of money to live. But he himself apparently despised money, and he hated people that used money for, you know, to influence other people, especially to influence the rabbi. So unfortunately, in a lot of places that he went, he basically said what he felt. He was like very straightforward about things. He said what he thought. And he didn't like the people that were very, you know, wealthy, because, you know, he didn't feel that money should have the power to influence other things. Unfortunately, he got himself into a lot of disputes in every place that he went, including this first place in Altoona. And basically, they had problems and controversy, and he had to leave. So a little while later, he basically got an invitation to be the Rav in, after Sarajevo and after Altoona, he got an invitation to be the Rav in Amsterdam. Okay, big Ashkenazi community in Amsterdam offered him to be the Rav. So he went there, and basically, again, he got himself into the same trouble, because he didn't, you know, the people that were wealthy didn't like him very much, because he always said what he felt, and he didn't want to be swayed by people's money. So that combination, again, got him in trouble. And this is the really interesting part of it. The reason why he got in trouble here was mainly because of a big dispute that happened over his time in Amsterdam. And that was that he was very, very anti-Shabtai Tzvi. You guys remember that Shabtai Tzvi? Again, a very important historical concept in Jewish history. Shabtai Tzvi, of course, was the... Who was he? Remember? False Messiah. Failed Messiah. Okay. Unfortunately, many, many people followed the Shabtai Tzvi. And even after the Shabtai Tzvi, you know, got lost and he converted to Islam and he died and a convert to Islam, etc., etc., many people in the Jewish world still believed he was coming back. Which, of course, is very dangerous today. You see what, you know, certain sects of Hasidus today still think that their Rebbe is coming back. I can't tell you for sure, but unfortunately, it's, you know, in your mind, if you know Jewish history a little bit, it's very scary to think, you know, what they're trying to say today and, you know, what happened back then. Anyway, so basically his goal in life in many places, he was exposed to when he was still in other parts of Europe, to the damaging effects of the Shabtai Tzvi movement and those that still carried out with some of the principles that Shabtai Tzvi had put forth. So in Holland, he basically, in Amsterdam, he was, you know, he pushed to try to get rid of all the people that had anything to do with Shabtai Tzvi. And one very powerful person that came from somewhere else, I think it was Nechemia Chayun, he came in, and basically he tried to, you know, sort of speak, doctor up some of, you know, his ideas. He wrote a whole pamphlet, and apparently he was a Sabbatian. I mean, he was a Sabbatian follower, and the Chacham Tzvi recognized some of his writings, the Shabtai Tzvi elements, and he basically went crazy, lambasted him, he tried to put him in Cherem, etc., etc. The problem was that the Sfarda community in Amsterdam, the Chacham Tzvi was in the Ashkenazi community in Amsterdam, the Sfarda community in Amsterdam basically accepted him. They accepted Rav Chayun, and they wanted to keep him there, and they felt that the rabbi of the Sfarda community, felt that his stuff wasn't so bad. So the Chacham Tzvi basically went on a whole rampage, him and another Rav who was there, from a messenger from Yerushalayim. His name was Rav Moshe Chagiz, also a very important person. The two of them basically tried to put this, you know, Sabbatian guy in Cherem, and the Sfarda community fought back. They, you know, they fought tooth and nail against the Chacham Tzvi, for basically they wanted to try to force him to accept the other person, and the Chacham Tzvi wouldn't give in. Okay, and even in the Chacham Tzvi's own community, even the Ashkenazi community, there were some people that didn't like him, and basically together they like tried to bring him to court, to secular people. It was a whole big mess, unfortunately, that he got himself in, and eventually he basically fled. He ran away. Again, it's unfortunate, and he was known as brilliant, but because of his style, because of trying to get rid of the Shabtai Tzvi people, so he basically had to leave. For a while, they actually invited him to go to England to be the Rav in London, of the Sfarda community in London. But apparently, he didn't take it. He went there for a little while, and apparently, he didn't take the position. And afterwards, he went back into other parts of Europe, and basically, he lived the very last part of his life. He was offered a position in Lviv, which is where he died, and there he lived for a few months. And that was like the happiest years in his life. He was able to teach and to do other things, and apparently he didn't have so many problems there, and that was great. Other times during his life, he also taught, and he had students, and etc., etc., but unfortunately he had a lot of controversy because of his style and his personality and his despise for money, etc., etc., and the Shabtai Tzvi issues. So that was basically his troubled life, okay? This is a portrait they took of him at some point. They drew of him. Supposedly that's what he looked like. That's basically, again, a little bit about the history of the Chacham Tzvi. Some of the shoes that I wrote here that he wrote about, we're not going to go into these now, but... one shoe he wrote about, though, go backwards to end to beginning. Koshering earthenware utensils after 12 months. A very famous kula of the Chacham Tzvi when it comes to koshering. So if you guys know the rules of koshering, if something becomes treif, so one of the ways of koshering it is to do hagalah, okay, to put it in boiling hot water, clean it off, put it in boiling hot water. The question is, what if you have like china, or if you have earthenware utensils, okay, porcelain, things like that, can you kosher them? The answer is, generally,
no.
Would you say? Yes. So the answer is, normally not, actually. Normally you're not allowed to.
Like, suffer a huge financial loss?
Right, so if you're going to suffer a huge financial loss, by the way, the reason why is because we assume that it's too hard to get whatever taste was absorbed into those utensils, it's too hard to get it out,
yeah,
even through our gullet.
Like, Thomas makes, like, if there's an earthenware vessel, that's like, the clothes are...
Okay, good, so right, okay, so it's not the same concept, but you're right, it's the same thing about Kli Cheres, they have a unique halacha.
Isn't
that
like Remy?
The what?
Liban Chama?
So Liban is a different thing than putting it in fire. That's a different thing. But there also, there's a question. In the Kli Cheres, that earthenware, you can't get out all the taste. Because it's too hard to... What'd you say? No. Not nothing with
that.
So that may be the exception. Correct. Maybe Machzir L'Kivshan might be an exception to the rule of earthenware, that you can bring it back to the furnace that was created and then like redo the whole thing all over again. Question is, halacha l'maaseh, how does that apply today? We're not going to go into that now. But the Chacham Tzvi's kula was basically that it is something which is very important to you, okay, and you wait 12 months, then maybe you can kosher even earthenware. Okay, again, it's used as a sniff lahaka. We don't use it like by itself, but together with other lenient factors in terms of how it got traced, etc., you can use that kula of the Chacham Tzvi. If you ask a rav, you can't do it yourself, but you ask a rav, Rav Adam will often follow that. That's a very well-known kula of the Chacham Tzvi. That's one well-known tshuva. And then tshuva, he talks about taking a pulse versus heartbeat in terms of what the determining the time of death. Okay, says that a pulse is very hard to tell, so basically maybe you have to follow the heartbeat. Again, that's shuva, we're not going to go into that now, but it's a very important shuva.
I feel like it's less relevant today because we have a lot more
stuff. So the shiloh, the where it comes up, the people quote it today when it comes to brain death. Okay, and the whole big discussion about brain death, brain death is different. So the Chacham Tzvi is one of the shuvas they quote to try to discuss whether brain death is really death, or do we say that the Jewish tradition is that you have to follow heartbeat also, okay, or respiratory issues. That's another important tshuva. And the last tshuva, really fascinating, the one here that I wrote at the beginning, he wrote a tshuva about a golem. Apparently, I think it was his grandfather, that apparently knew how to like make people through Sefer Yetzirah. And the Shiloh was asked whether the golem that I think it was his grandfather created, can he count for the minion? What a crazy tshuva, right? The Chassid wrote a whole tshuva about it, and he basically tries to bring proofs that the bottom line is that you can't. Okay, but it's like funny that he actually wrote tshuvas about it. Apparently, again, I don't know if it was really real, but either he thought it was real, or maybe it could have been real. Unclear. But again, another famous tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi, when it comes to this issue of the golem, he passed that a golem cannot count for a minion. Okay, be that as it may. And then I get another interesting one that he talks about. But his most famous tshuva, by far the most famous tshuva, and by far the tshuva with the most impact today, and continues to have impact to this day, today, maybe even more so today than 40 years ago, is his tshuva about Yom Tov Sheni in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, this one has been, you know, changing the landscape of visitors to Israel during Yom Tov already for the past 20, 30 years, and even before that, but especially now, this tshuva is really groundbreaking and continues to impact on the societal practice of what we'll keep when they come to visit Israel for Yom Tov. Do they keep one day or 2 days? Okay, so now everybody ready to start learning this topic? You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Let me give you some background. Okay, before we get to the Chacham Tzvi, just understand where this is all coming from. First part of the background, I'm assuming you guys probably know, but we'll just review it just to make sure everybody's got it straight. Okay, why do we keep 2 days of Yom Tov in the first place in Chutz Laretz?
Because it would take longer for everyone to know that it was Rosh Chodesh.
Okay, good. Meaning originally, the way they made Rosh Chodesh was because they came to the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, witnesses came and said, we saw the new moon. Okay, the Beis Din would interrogate them, decide correct, not correct. They would decide, okay, great, everybody is, they check out, today's Rosh Chodesh. Wonderful. Now, let's say that this month is, let's say, for example, the month of Nisan. Okay, now, the messengers are going to start going out to all the different places in Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael. And how long is it going to take them to get to, let's say, Bavel, for example?
2 weeks.
At least 2 weeks, if not more. Would you say?
Minimum
2 weeks. Okay, even in Eretz Yisrael, it could be there were certain parts that took longer than that, but let's assume for now that in Eretz Yisrael, everything was basically, they were able to get there by Pesach time. But they're going to Bavel, they're going to who knows where, going to Egypt, wherever else, okay, they might be. And the question is, the communities don't know yet which day was Rosh Chodesh. How are they going to know which day to celebrate Pesach? So what's the answer? Because of that, they celebrated 2 days.
But how did celebrating 2 days help if they found out 2 weeks late?
Well, they always knew, put it this way, Rosh Chodesh is always one of 2 days. Okay? Rosh Chodesh is either the 29th day of the month or the 30th day of the month.
Okay?
That's based on the lunar calendar. Just the cycle of the moon is such that a lunar cycle is roughly 29 and a half days. So the question is, what was the precise moment that they saw the new moon? It was either going to be on the 29th day or the 30th day, but they didn't know which one. So therefore, they were able to keep 2 days, meaning the 15th of the month and the 16th of the month, for example, for Pesach, as being the first 2 days of Pesach, they knew it was going to be one of those 2 days, but they didn't know which one yet. Okay? Again, Shavuos is a whole different story, which we're not going to get into now because of the fact that Shavuos is counted 50 days from Pesach, so that's a whole other discussion. Sukkos is also an interesting discussion. Same thing for Sukkos, but for Rosh Hashanah, we know that Rosh Hashanah is 2 days even here in Eretz Yisrael. Because even here, by the time they decreed the day was Rosh Hashanah, even in Eretz Yisrael, they couldn't get to tell everybody in time. So Eretz Yisrael, everybody keeps 2 days here on Rosh Hashanah. Okay. But for Sukkot, everybody understand what I just said about Rosh Hashanah? Okay, again, it's a whole sukkah in the Gemara. It's a big discussion. And some Rishonim felt that later when they had a real calendar in the time of the Rif, that maybe you can even keep 1 day of Rosh Hashanah even here in Eretz Yisrael, because they already knew the calendar. The calendar was set. But Lamai said, we keep 2 days for Sukkot, we keep 2 days for Rosh Hashanah. That's the bottom line. Okay? Now, here's the next question. Today, even for Sukkot and Pesach, we also have a calendar. Okay? Why then do we need to keep 2 days in Chutz La'aretz for those Yom Tovim if today we know which day, based on Hillel's calendar, we know which day is Rosh Chodesh? So what's the answer? Anybody know? Minhag avuseichem bideichem. Okay, very good. The Gemara says in Beitza on Daf Dalet that the minhag of your forefathers in Chutz La'aretz was to keep 2 days, and therefore, even if you know the calendar afterwards, we still should keep 2 days to follow the custom of our forefathers, because we're afraid maybe something will go wrong and there'll be a decree from the king and you won't be able to calculate the calendar, etc., etc. They'll forget, and basically we don't want to take any chances. Okay, that is the source of why we keep 2 days in Chutz La'aretz to this day, today, of Yom Tov. Okay? Yeah.
The last line of
Minhag. I will say Chem B'Yadeichem. I'm going to put it on the board. This beautiful clean board that he made for us here.
If that's a thing, then how come people say that you
should keep 2 days when you come to Eretz Yisrael? Hold on, wait. You're jumping a few steps. We didn't get there yet, okay? We have to get this straight first, okay? We have to get this straight first. Yes,
Rahel. If that's the only source, then obviously it should never be on purpose, but if, we would come to, for whatever reason, do Malacha on the second day, would be somewhat less.
Yes, it's only Darabanan. The second day is only Darabanan, and there are certain leniencies when it comes to taking medicine and a few other things. In general, the halachas are the same, but the severity of the halacha is less. Correct. Yeah, correct.
Just in a
No. I'm saying even in Chutz La'aretz, the severity is only Darabanan as opposed to Daraiso, like the first day, so it's going to be less. You have to be careful about that. That's not so clear that you would hold that way. Maybe most people would not accept. In theory, yes. I'm not sure how many people actually eat egg matzah on the 8th day. Gebrux is more accepted to do that. That's not one of the normal things that you would say for the 8th day. I mean, most of the kulas are not based on chametz things. It's mostly that's right. That's gebrux. That's different for the 8th day. I mean, those that keep gebrux as a custom. Yeah, but gebrux is only a minhag. Again, most halachas are the same for the second day, but there are some leniencies for certain things because it's only midrabanan. Okay, but most halachas are the same. But it's only midrabanan, it's not midrabanan. Okay, let's not get sidetracked on that. Again, if you're giving a share on Yom Tov Sheni, we'll go into that more. But for now, I think this is sufficient to get us here. Okay, now let's make Sydney happy here. So how does this play itself out when it comes to keeping 2 days in Eretz Yisrael? What would you think? You would think that you should keep one here.
Because
why?
In those days when someone would come to Eretz Yisrael, they would keep one.
Okay, well, hold on. You're jumping a little bit. You may not be wrong, but let's hold off on that for now.
Because either way, especially if you're going to be in Yerushalayim or in a central area of Israel, you're going to be somewhere where they would know for sure, and therefore you wouldn't have a question of which day it would be. So you would think.
Okay, meaning here, there's the place that all along, Minhag Avoseichem B'Yadeichem here was to keep 1 day. Because the Beis Din was able to send out the messengers in time for everybody in Yisrael to know. Okay, so again, so now we're talking. So we're going to have to get into it a little more detailed. I would have assumed that Minhag Avoseichem B'Yadeichem follows the location. Meaning in the Gemara, it sounds like it's talking about Chutz La'aretz, which implies it's based on the location. And therefore, one would assume, on a simple level, before you learn anything inside, that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, it's based on the location as well. However, as Aviva points out, it's not so simple. Okay, how do we know it's not so simple? So here, again, if you're giving a whole shiur just on this, I would give you more makaros inside. But here, because we're focusing on the Chacham Tzvi, I'm just going to tell you outside. Okay, there is a very famous Mishnah, Maseches Pesachim, in Gan Gemara there as well. Okay, you know what it says? It says that there is a concept. Okay, there is a concept that a person that lives in one place and goes to travel to another place, which customs should he keep? Should he keep the customs of where he came from, or the customs where he's visiting? Ah, so maybe you would say you should keep minhag ha'malkum. However, it's not so simple. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says, and the Gemara says that any more stringent customs that apply in the place where you came from, you should keep also in the place where you're visiting. Okay, now you have to be careful not to do it in a way that publicly people will get upset at you. So, meaning when you're being machmir not to do something, that's fine. Okay, something which is like a positive thing that you go out and do positively is more of a problem. But certainly a chumrah, okay, a chumrah to do something, to not do something is certainly included in this. Just as an example, okay? Just an example. Let's say that you guys, how many people here keep glot? Like, eat only glot meat? Nobody?
I don't think so.
If you come from America, I can almost guarantee you the only glot meat. Yeah. What?
Do you mean like, based in like KLBD versus
Mahadran
in England?
I guess it was probably what they would call Mahadran. I actually don't know. I assume that they eat glot, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they may not. Okay, anybody who comes from America, I can almost assure you that you eat
you
glot.
You can't get anything.
Huh? Right. What? I'm not sure what the Hashkafas in England. I don't know if they all keep glot. But put it this way, okay? If you would tell somebody who eats glot, comes to Eretz Yisrael, and here they want to eat Rabbanut meat. Some of the Rabbanut meat in Israel is not glot. Some of it may be glot, and some of it is probably not glot. Would you be allowed, if you keep glot in Chutz Laaretz, to come here and then not eat glot, if you're coming here to visit for a year? What's the answer? You probably shouldn't. Okay, meaning you should keep your minhag based on where you come from because you're only visiting here in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Have you got that? That's the concept we're talking about here. It's called minhag ha'makom shiyasa nishan. Okay, this is minhag ha'makom shiyasa nishan. Okay? That's the concept. If you're visiting a place, then you should keep the stringencies, the chumras, of the place where you come from, even when you're visiting somewhere else.
Doesn't that answer the question?
Okay, so good. So, yeah. Okay.
But when they're in Israel, they are.
Okay.
And then she was saying how, so if she were to bring like a snack from America that wasn't Yashan,
right,
and she would bring it to Israel and it wasn't Yashan, she wouldn't be allowed to eat it here.
Okay, so that's okay. You have to figure out what her minhag is. Meaning, the rule is that in Eretz Yisrael, any food which is grown in Eretz Yisrael has to keep the rules of Yashan. Okay, the rules of the leniency of not keeping Yashan only applies in Chutz Laaretz. Okay. Now, that may be what they meant in one hand, that anything they eat here has to be Yashan, but if they meant that even if they would get like products from Chutz Laaretz, like from America, they would bring here, that would also be included in their minhag, then that's like an extra minhag they took upon themselves. They didn't need to do that, but they took it upon themselves because it's easy to keep Yashan while you're in Eretz Yisrael, because most products here are Yashan. Okay. So then that's correct. They would, but are they required to do that? I don't think so. I don't think they're required to do it. If they want to, they can. That's the idea of keeping the customs of the place where you come from when you go to visit somewhere else. Okay, meaning, again, if they're more stringent. Okay, chumras, a more stringent custom. So according to that now, based on that custom in the Gemara, what would you think about keeping Yom Tov Sheni here in Eretz Yisrael? What do you say? What? Right. Okay, then probably you should keep 2 days here because that is your custom coming from Chutz Laaretz. Now, why is that considered to be a custom? Why is it a custom, not a halacha? Because what did the Gemara say about Yom Tov Sheni in the first place?
It's a minhag.
Minhag ha'oseichem b'yadeichem. Okay, the Gemara calls it a minhag. So even though, yes, it's true, it's a very important minhag, it may even have the status of a nisr d'rabbanon, but once the Gemara calls it a minhag, it would seem to be that takes on the rules of minhag, and therefore, if you come to Eretz Yisrael to visit, you should keep the rules of Yom Tov Sheni that you keep when you're in Chutz Laaretz. Okay? And that you should know, that is what most of the Rishonim, not all the Rishonim talked about it, but the Rishonim that talked about it on the Gemara, Imsachim, seem to assume that. Okay, the Baal HaMor talks about it. There's a few other Rishonim also that seem to imply that you would indeed keep Yom Tov Sheni here in Eretz Yisrael if you come from Chutz Laaretz based on this Sugya of the Gemara, Imsachim Adaf Nun. Okay? Everybody with you so far? All right. Now, who made this into the major sheet that it is today? Meaning, Lamaisa, most Poskim say that you should indeed keep 2 days when you come to Eretz Yisrael. So if you look on the second sheet here, the Avkas Rochel is the one that really, made it take off and made that be very widely accepted. Yes?
Isn't there something about people who come for, all the festivals?
That's a very modern idea. Maybe Rosh Hashanah was on. Orbach held to that, but in the original sources, nobody says that.
Own property.
Yeah, it's iffy. It could be also that's included. Maybe that makes
it... Well, the people I know, my friends, keep one day, and they visit, they own a flat, and they will come to the festival.
If they come for all the Shalosh Regalim, then there's room to talk about being Mekil. If they don't come for all of them, and they simply have a...
They come for
Doesn't help.
But then why do we keep one day?
Who's we?
Why would people keep one day?
Well, we didn't get to that. We have to wait till we get to the Chacham Tzvi, of course. I'll give you the background here. I want you to appreciate how much of a chiddush the Chacham Tzvi is, and also how brilliant he is, which we haven't gotten to yet, okay? We have to get to the background first. Okay? So the Avkas Rochel, basically, anybody know who the Avkas Rochel was? I don't know if you guys will know this. Okay, the Avkas Rochel, you see it on the second sheet here? You see where it says Avkas Rochel? Shoot Avkas Rochel. That is actually the responsa, the shoot, the tshuvos of Rav Yosef Karo, author of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, he wrote Shlomos and Shuvos as well, and he called him the Avkas Rochel. So look at his question. Okay, you ready, guys? Shema Hayos in Eretz Yisrael Chutzbaretz V'Dato Lachzor. He intends to go back to Chutzbaretz. In Mispalik in Eretz Yisrael, should he daven like in Eretz Yisrael? V'Tam Lama Ha'olim L'Regel Mispalim for Hesek V'Chutzbaretz V'Ein Mochen. And why do people coming from Chutzbaretz come to Eretz Yisrael and in public they daven, second they daven, and nobody protests? So look what he writes. Tshuva. Dover Pashatu. It's obvious. That anybody that plans to go back to the place that they live should keep the customs of the place that they come from. Even to be lenient. As long as you don't do it publicly. Okay, meaning you should keep all the customs of the place that you come from. The stringent customs you can do in public. The more lenient customs you should not do in public so as not to get people upset. Okay? What? Maratan, yeah. So his example here is a perfect example. Okay, let's say davening, Yom Tov Sheni davening in the main shul in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? But it's not, it's also being makel. It's davening, let's say, you know, doing something which is, you know, if it was chol, you're not allowed to make extra brachas for like Mekadesh Yisrael v'hazman and then, you know, bracha on haftorah and halal. Well,
not halal. Better to keep second day than not keep second day.
What'd you say?
It's objectively more like.
Okay, fine, you're right. I mean, the intrinsic day, idea of the day of Yom Tov Sheni is a chumrah. You're correct. I guess the best example would be like eating. Okay, let's say you're not makbid on Yashan in Eretz Yisrael. Let's say everybody in Eretz Yisrael is makbid on Yashan. That's not necessarily correct. Let's say everybody here is makbid on Yashan. Okay, and you eat something which is not Yashan in public that everybody can see. That's a problem. Why? Because everybody's going to get upset at you. Okay, they're all going to get mad. You don't want to offend the norms of the place that you come to and cause makbid.
What if you're a place where they're not? Not about Yashan.
Okay, so that's fine. I'm just giving you an example to understand. It was just an example.
Sorry,
Yashan is basically that, again, it's a little complicated. Basically, you're not allowed to eat bread or grain that was harvested after Pesach during that year. Okay, meaning any grain that was harvested after Pesach, you're not allowed to eat that grain or bread until after Pesach of the next year. Okay, that is the halacha. It's mentioned in the Torah. In Eretz Yisrael, it's absolutely Asur Daraisa. In Chutzpah, it's a machlokes. Most poskim say it's still Asur, but yet the majority of people across the world have the custom of being lenient about it for some reason, which we're not sure exactly why. What?
How is King smell bread kosher?
Well, they're not makbid on Yashan, probably. And most other people are not either. The OU also is not makbid on Yashan. Yeah, Chutzpah. In Eretz Yisrael, everybody agrees you have to be makbid on Yashan. In Chutzpah, you know, the widespread custom is to be lenient.
But you can't eat or that you can't produce bread that's.
Where? In Eretz Yisrael?
In Yashan.
You can't eat it. You can grow it, but you can't eat it. You gotta wait till Pesach of the next year. Alright. Okay, let's go on here. So then he says, sorry, did you have a question?
Yeah, sorry. So is it saying you can't do the more lenient minhag in front of other people?
In public. You can do it, he says, but not in public.
It's not talking about the more stringent one.
Right, the stranger things means you're not doing something. So that's fine to not do something in front of people. They don't know the difference if you're not, you know, if they're not doing it, they wouldn't know that you normally did do it. But
for example, if someone keeping 2 days like sukkahs and saying his sukkahs on the streets that everyone would see, like with that count.
So that's a shaila. The first day, the second day of sukkahs is still chol moed. So that's fine. Your question would be on Shmini Atzeres.
Yeah.
So Shmini Atzeres is a shaila. That's a good shaila. So there's machlokas opposed to the ma'aseh b'zman
hazeh.
That's true also. You're right. But the thing is, you're not allowed to take down your sukkah right away, but Israelis, we won't sit in the sukkah. Okay? If you see somebody sitting in the sukkah, that's actually a shiloh.
You don't sit in the sukkah either in America.
What?
You don't sit in the sukkah.
Most people do. You don't?
Florida,
let's talk afterwards. Okay, we have to talk about that. What?
I'm still
chastorah, no. Not chastorah, it's Shmini Atzeres, though.
Yeah.
Here in Eretz Yisrael, Shmini Atzeres and chastorah the same day. So most people will not eat in their sukkah on Shmini Atzeres / chastorah. So again, that's based on a whole discussion of Shmini Atzeres, which we don't have time to get into now. Okay, I'm happy to talk to you about it tomorrow morning during other classes.
From an American standpoint, from somebody who's put flowers, do we look at it as a separate question of the first days versus the second days?
or it's all given the same opinion? Because you're saying that Sukkot Torah and Shemitah Torah is a whole different thing.
Yeah. Again, what I'm saying is, no, the keeping of the second day is fine. That's okay. What I'm saying is the fact that you, if you go out and sit in your sukkah on the second day, that's something which you do in public, which I don't know if you want to call leniency, but it's something that everybody would notice. That's something that perhaps could cause machlokas. And therefore, there's a whole big discussion about that today for you guys here in Eretz Yisrael. You know, would you sit in the sukkah on Shemini Atzeres? And many posts would say no.
We're women also, so it's a whole different...
That's also true, correct. But even for the guys, it's a big discussion. Most posts would say that you shouldn't for that reason, actually. But anyway, we're not going to go into that right now. But anyway, going back to this, so then he says basically that's the halacha. K'mo shumim v'vor v'rush, perak makam shenago, etc., etc. The kevet shekena davar, pashutim v'vor shalom olam kol shenato lachzer, anybody that plans to go back to chutz l'aretz, on a roim, so ki'ilu ha adayim makam shenato nisham, we treat him as if he's still there. The chol davar, for everything. Uvad shasa b'tzinam, as long as he does it in private. B'mei ha-machlokas. Meaning when you daven, you have a second day minyan, you should do it in private, not in public. Basically, it's obvious you should have second day minyanim. Okay, just you should have it in private. What?
Specifically, somebody who intends to go back.
Yeah, correct. Kalan shadat olatzar. Since you intend to go back, it's so obvious that we shouldn't even mention it at all. Okay. Wow. All right. Now. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says, and then he says, "V'chein masim b'chol yom every day b'chol shana v'shana every year olim l'sholosh regalim." Okay, people go; they come for sholosh regalim to Eretz Yisrael, v'osu yom sheni shagalios, and they make 2 days of Yom Tov. Okay, v'lo odel shemiskamsin, they get together minyan minichutzlar, they have minyanim, mispalim tefila v'kar b'torah matir minavi, etc., 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 etc. Okay, again, he basically says, I'm going to skip a few lines here; it's the last two or three lines. Certainly you have to say the sphere of the Gedolei Olam, all the Gedolim that saw this and nobody protested, it must be that they held Lo Tani Al Yishana Adam Yama Chokas El Mlacha, etc., etc. Basically what they say is that you're allowed to do second day Minyanim, and when the Gemara says that you shouldn't not do something because of Machlokas, what it meant to say, okay, is in terms of Malacha. We're not going to go into the details of this now because this is going to get a little tricky with the Sugya. Okay, so I'm not going to give you all the points here. But basically the bottom line is what he's saying here is that to not do malach on Yom Tov Sheni certainly should not be done, and even to have a second day minyan is perfectly fine as long as it's done in private. Okay, that's the psak of the Shulchan Aruch here in the Avkas Rochel, and the Mishnah Berurah. If you skip two sources, the Mishnah Berurah and Simantuf Tzadi Vav passes this way lahalacha. Then Chutzlar Shabbat Eretz Yisrael Im Dato Las or Mekomo Tzarech Laso Shnei Yavim Tovin. Okay, when Mekomo Kontilas Yom Tov Tzarech Lis Palav Veso B'Tzini. You should have in the Yom Tov Sheni davening in your house. Or at least in a private place, not unlike the main shul, etc., etc. That's the halacha. Okay, so most of the achronim followed the Avkas Rochel, including the Mishnah Berurah and many other poskim, followed this and said that if you come to visit Eretz Yisrael, you should keep 2 days. Everybody got that?
The Mishnah Berurah said the Shulchan
Aruch. Absolutely, yes. He passed like the Avkas Rochel. The Shulchan Aruch himself doesn't quote this case. Okay, interestingly enough, he doesn't quote this case. He quotes the other way. What happens if you live in Israel and you go to Chutz Laaretz? That he does talk about, but in the Shulchan Aruch itself, he actually doesn't quote this case, which is interesting. But the Mishnah Berurah still assumes that a halacha like the after call. Yeah, Aviva.
When it comes to things public versus private, would dressing in Yom Tov clothing be considered something that's...
So that's a good question. The answer is, though, you're right, and some people get upset about that, but there are sometimes, I guess, that people even in Israel dress in suits and ties, so I guess it's not like so obvious. But you're right. I mean, that is a good point, and it's a valid point. I'm not sure what to answer about that. I don't know what to say. I think it's a good point. Okay. Yeah.
Because I mean, it's fairly easy to be like discreet about it if you're staying in a hotel with all Americans and everyone's keeping the 2 days. But like, we rent an apartment whenever we come, and like my brother's always like, find a different way to go and find a mini.
Right. Yeah. It's complicated.
Doing it not publicly.
It's complicated. So again, the minion, they usually have like the minion in the side room or in the basement or whatever it is. That's fine. You're asking about the clothes is a good question. Again, I assume because it's not an actual practice, it's just what you wear, that people are not going to be... And today, by the way, also, there's a shiloh today, maybe people today in Eretz Yisrael are fine with it. I mean, people understand they do that today, and they want your business, they want you to come and keep 2 days, because that's how the hotels get all their business, that's how the vendors, etc., etc. You know?
It's such a big thing in our generation that... No, I'm not talking about necessarily like our generation is in our age, but our generation is in our Jewish society currently, that so many people come to Israel just for Yom Tov, just for this, or for... just for the year, and just for 2 years, whatever the case, that it's such a norm at this point, does it mean that it's offending people?
It could be that's fine. I mean, it could be because of that, that there's no problem walking with clothing in the street. It could be because of that there's no problem of davening, you know, in the main shul if you need to. Not at the same time as the other minyan, but, you know, some people today are, you know, pretty okay with it. Now, I shouldn't say everybody is, because there are some people that get a little upset and they get annoyed and like, why are you imposing your Yom Tov Sheni standards here in Eretz Yisrael? But I think the vast majority of people
care what you do.
I think because they feel that if you're in Eretz Yisrael, they don't want you to show that you're like proud to be like a Chutz Laaretz Jew. They want you to move here.
We would feel uncomfortable if we saw people who we know live in Israel in America on the second day of doing stuff out in public. You would feel uncomfortable watching that.
But that's opposite, because that's like in your mind, like you're like, oh, they're breaking. These are
serious issues, okay? These are serious issues. You should know, by the way, most postim hold that if you're an Israeli in Chutz Laaretz, that you're not allowed to do mitzvah in public for that reason, okay? For that reason.
My sister lives there. When she comes, she has to say she says
davening
differently.
Right. Other than that, she's got to keep everything, okay? I mean, that is an issue of zilzul Yom Tov. We don't want to embarrass or degrade Yom Tov by doing things in public. But even if in somebody's house, if you're in somebody's house, it's also, you know, we assume that most postim assume it's still a problem. Okay, so you're right. That may be a difference than here, where it's the other way around. Here, it's like they're being more machmir and not keeping malacha. Anyway, this is still an open issue. Okay, it's still an open issue. Exactly how it applies today, whether people call it machlokas or not. But the bottom line is that many people that come from Chutz Laaretz do keep 2 days of Yom Tov. Now, question is, where in the world did the one-day opinion come from? How in the world do you go against all this and keep only 1 day? Comes along none other than Rav Tzvi Ashkenaz and Chacham Tzvi, and he comes up with a brilliant argument. Let's see if you guys like this argument or not. Okay. Again, understand that this is not the position of most of the Achronim at the time. Even his own son, by the way, his own son. Remember who the Chacham Tzvi's son was? Rav Yaakov Emden. Okay, heard of him?
Yeah.
Okay, he's a pretty famous posik as well. That was the Chacham Tzvi's son. Rav Yaakov Emden also did not hold like his father when it came to this issue. Okay. So let's see what he said. Okay. Sheila Sha'alta b'nei Chutz Laaretz ha'olim Eretz Yisrael derech Arai. They come to visit temporarily. What should they do? So let's see what he says. Tshuva. Okay, this is the answer. Nir la niyaz dati. It seems, in my humble opinion, that it seems to me that they should follow the people that live in Israel in terms of the holidays. They should do what the Israelis do. Okay. Now, what is he going to do with the whole sugya on the Gemara and Pesachim about keeping the customs of the place where you come from? So watch this. He says this is not part of the sugya in the Gemara and Pesachim of keeping the customs minag or chumra of the place where you come from. You know why not? Okay. Lo mi baya b'tfilos uvrachos u'kriyas sefer Torah. He says certainly I can tell you that davening and brachos and reading the Torah and all those things, that's not included. Those are not stringencies. Okay, it's not a stringency to daven. It's not a stringency to read the Torah. Why? Let's say that I come along and tell you I want to say challah with a bracha on, you know, 3 days after Pesach. I want to come and read the Torah and make brachas, you know, Baruch Hashem Hashem Avorach, etc., etc. I want to do that, you know, 3 days after Rosh Hashanah. Okay, let's say I want to say the whole Rosh Hashanah tefillah today. Am I allowed to do that? Absolutely not. Of course not. Not only am I not allowed to do that, what have I done if I did that? What have I caused? A bracha levatala. Okay? He says, Averi hibiyoto. That's an Avera. So he says, that's not a chumra. Okay? Meaning when it's required, you do it. But it's not a stringency. A stringency is something that if you want to keep it, you can keep it. This is something which you can only keep when it's warranted. But if it's not warranted, you're not allowed to do it. It's an Avera. Okay? So that's point number one. And then he says, and of course, what he means to say is that if you would keep these tefillahs, extra tefillahs, even in Eretz Yisrael, when you're not supposed to, it's a bracha levatala. Elafilu b'malacha mutarvim. Even to do malacha, it's also mutar. Why is that? Now, look what he says here. She'ilu hayu ko anshe hamakom shiyatsu misham kamik viyusa. Okay. If you would say that all the people in Europe, all the people in America would make aliyah. Wow. What the day would come. Okay, soon, when kibbutz galus happens completely, all the people in America and in England and in Australia and everywhere, they all make aliyah. Wow. What happens if they all make aliyah? Can they keep 2 days? They say, we miss 2 days. We really like our 2-day yom. Okay, we love our cooking, even our 3 days. We love our tefillahs. We love our baal tefillah. We miss him. Okay, we want him on the second day also. We want to keep 2 days. Rabbi, can we keep 2 days? What's the halacha?
Well, he's saying if you go by that logic, then it would be that they're stuck keeping it.
What do you mean?
Because minhag
ha'aretz. No. He says if you make aliyah,
it would be bal tosef.
All right. He's saying in this particular situation, if you would want to make aliyah and live here permanently, you would not be allowed to keep your second day. Pshita, look at the next line. Pshita, shah surim hayu, lasas yos from yomecha, bishim bal tosef. That's bal tosef. To keep a second day of yom tov in Eretz Yisrael if you live here. Shari, how do we know that? Because the Gemara says that yosha mishmini misukah loke. If you sleep in your sukkah on shmini atzeres, you get malchus in Eretz Yisrael. V'chei b'pesach ha'shvuas, and pesach ha'shvuas as well. Also, yom echad moed yosha miyam mitzvah. If you keep an extra day over, al bal tosef. You have violated bal tosef. Wow. You can't do that. If you make aliyah and live in Israel, you are not allowed to keep a second day.
So it's not...
Hold on. What about the sugya of this question? V'lo amru nosin alav chumri makom gatsum nisham. The only time the Gemara says that you keep the stringencies of the place where you come from, elav chumri sharashayim b'nei amakom shiyatza zem nisham linhog chumrasam b'makom anogim kula. Afim yikmud zirasam b'makom halaz. Okay, only when, if you want to, let's say you move to a place permanently, you would be allowed to continue keeping the custom of the place where you came from. Okay, in that case, if you would be allowed to keep it, then you can keep it and you should keep it if you come to visit there. Hold on. I thought with that, I'll repeat in just a second, let me just finish this line. I thought with Dara She'ilu Bo, Bene Makom Achumra, Lamakom Akula, the cover with Yerasam Bo, how you are surely not Chumasam Mizeh, Lo Amru. They didn't say that there. Okay, meaning if you have a situation where the place where they're more machmir, they would come to live permanently in the place where they're more mekil, if in that situation they would not be allowed to continue keeping their stringency, their chumrah, then the halacha is that you don't do that even if you're just visiting. And the example is this example. Okay, if you, again, one more time, if you would make aliyah and move permanently to Eretz Yisrael, would you be allowed to keep your tashini even if you wanted to? The answer is
no.
Absolutely not. Chamsi says that example is therefore also not subject to the rule of minhag hamakom shiyatza misham and chumra hamakom shiyatza misham. So therefore, even if you're visiting Eretz Yisrael, okay, you are not going to keep a second day, because if you would move there permanently, you would not be allowed to keep it. Essentially, what does that say? That's essentially saying follow the location. That's essentially what he's saying. He doesn't say it exactly in that way, but that's his concept. Okay. What do you mean?
Yeah, there are people who do that.
Hold on, we haven't finished the practical point yet, but this is what the Chacham Tzvi says. He says you keep 1 day if you come to Eretz Yisrael to visit. Okay?
So he holds that?
What'd you say?
He holds that you should keep 1 day.
Right? That's what you're saying, black and white here. Yeah.
So what's he saying about minhag avoseichem miyadchem that only applies to situations where you are allowed to be
machmir? Exactly. Meaning if you would move there permanently, you would still be allowed to keep the stringent custom if you wanted to. But in a case where it's baal tosef to do so, such as here, it's an aveira, then the whole concept...
I mean, it makes perfect sense. Like a minhag should not override... Like halacha, it makes
right.
sense.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
When would it be allowed?
What?
When would it be allowed to keep second day? Where?
Where? In chutzpah, but not in Eretz Yisrael.
Anywhere but
Eretz
Yisrael.
Yeah.
So then, what would he say about somebody who lives in Israel and lives somewhere else?
What'd you say?
What would he say about somebody who lives in?
So that's a great question. Okay, that's a great question. It could be, it's not clear. Okay, people still discuss this today. Many people today feel that if the Chacham Tzvi is right, maybe if you live in Israel, you should keep a complete 2 full days in Chutz Laaretz. He doesn't stretch it out. I mean, it's...
He doesn't
it's not the same logic. It's not the same logic.
If Chutz Laaretz, they come to...
Right. It sounds like it yeah. should be two.
Right. The difference is, the only difference is like this, okay? Meaning that the Chacham Tzvi's logic
is that
not
if you're
clear
doing
with,
the
yeah.
wrong thing, then you're over on
it. If you would move there, then you would what's it called? Then you would be over Baal Tosef, then you should keep 1 day. According to the Chacham Tzvi, if you go the other way, let's say you're in Eretz Yisrael and you move to Chutz Laaretz, do you keep 2 days? Are you allowed to keep 1 day? No. You have to keep 2 days, right? You have to keep 2 days. So it could be, he would say, since if you move to Chutz Laaretz, you have to keep 2 days, then maybe you have to keep there also based on minhag hamakom shiyatza misham. Meaning based on this principle, he would say the opposite. But it's not so clear. Okay, meaning the logic he uses is very specific to the Eretz Yisrael case. It's hard to know 100% what he would say in the other way. But many posts, including R' Soloveitchik and others, assume that according to the Chacham Tzvi, you really would keep 2 days in Chutz Laaretz. And therefore, the Rav actually held, he told his Talmidim sometimes that if they lived in Israel and visited Chutz Laaretz, they would actually keep 2 full days. not just be machmir and not do malacha, but in private, like basically, you know, they would daven, you know, they would
daven
chol, but no, they had daven yom tov davening. So it's not clear, but it stands to reason that maybe he would say that you should keep 2 full days, but it's not clear. Okay, that's a good point, and you know, still a question. But again, today most people don't follow the Chacham Tzvi on that point. I mean, even if they follow the Chacham Tzvi when they come to Israel and keep 1 day, if they make Aliyah and go back to Chutzlaretz, they usually will still keep 1 day and just be machmir not to do malacha. Again, for whatever that's worth. Okay, let's just finish this up. And then he says, okay, he says, even though the Gemara says, keep the custom of keeping 2 days of Yom Tov because maybe, you know, there's going to be a problem that people are going to not remember, and the king is going to make a decree that you can't keep the calendar, and you're going to forget what day it is, etc., etc. He says, Hachil Kula Gufa Lo Shaycha. That issue is only relevant Elak Shemis become Chutzlaretz. That's only when they're in Chutzlaretz. Al Biosu Meretz Yisrael Lo Shaycha. But in Eretz Yisrael, we're not worried about that, because in Eretz Yisrael, the messengers always got here anyway, so regardless, we always keep 1 day in Eretz Yisrael. The Kevish Eretz Yisrael Yisr Hu Lohosiv Yom Echad Al Mitzvah. And the Adanshe Eretz Yisrael Lohosiv Yom Echad Yoser. Exactly what I said before, you can't add on an extra day, but because of Baal Tosim, Yaakosim Torah, Ulahachmir, Afa Boim Yechutzlaretz, Asurim Linogim Kashay Shal Galilus. Even if you come to visit from Chutzlaretz, you cannot keep a second day, even if you're only there temporarily, etc., etc. And then the last line, he says, Vadnir Lanias Dati Kosati. He says, I wrote what I believe is correct. Again, he's going against many, many Achron when he writes this, but that's what the Chacham Tzvi holds. Okay? So now, so hold on. So most poskim indeed said to keep 2 days until about 40 years ago, even 30 or 20 years ago. Vast majority of poskim in print and in, you know, orally, you know, that people came to ask shilas to, vast majority of poskim said to keep 2 days. Meaning the Chacham Tzvi's logic makes a lot of sense. But most poskim said, well, if the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch are all telling you to keep 2 days, and basically they'll argue, well, the Chacham Tzvi's logic makes sense, but it's not necessarily correct. I mean, how do you know for sure that just because if you would move there permanently, that you wouldn't be allowed to keep 2 days, that means when you come to visit that you can't keep 2 days? It's a chiddush, okay? It's a chiddush. You can't prove that he's correct. It's logical, but you can't prove that. So therefore, most poskim held, no, you got to keep 2 days.
All right? Thing
correct, but the Chacham Tzvi is not saying it's Baal Tosef. He's not saying it's Baal Tosef. He's saying that if Baal Tosef would apply, if you move there, then there's no concept of keeping the stringency of where you come from.
Meaning
if you
no
come to visit
now,
understand?
Being Baal Tosef for keeping 2 days.
Correct. You're not. It's not Baal Tosef now. He's simply saying that this concept of minhag lavav shiyatsu bishan, okay, doesn't apply, and therefore you should keep 1 day. So again, maybe he would say it's Baal Tosef at the end, but that's not the concept he's using. Okay, he would say you shouldn't keep 1 day. You shouldn't keep 2 days. Once you don't keep 2 days, then maybe it does become, let's say, a bracha levatala to do it on the second day. But the Baal Tosef is mainly if you would move there that you wouldn't be allowed to do it. So therefore, here also halacha is the same that you should keep only 1 day. But the concept that he's pushing at is the Baal Tosef if you would move there. Yeah.
So then why does Anamoy maintain 2 days?
Oh, again, so one more time. So most poskim disagree with the Chacham Tzvi. Okay, most poskim basically held that the Chacham Tzvi, even though his logic was very good, was not the majority opinion. It was a very big chiddush. And we say no, the Gemara Pesachim still applies. Okay, this concept here still applies. Even if, you know, you would move here, so okay, you would move here, so it's Baal Tosef. But right now you didn't move yet. So if you didn't move yet, you still gotta keep the custom of the place where you come from.
Well, what happens if I came here this year and
made Aliyah? Okay, so you made Aliyah, but
yeah, you didn't make Aliyah yet. What if I'm like right here and I between now and when I make Aliyah, I never went back to Chutzlaretz.
It doesn't matter. Meaning, as long as you plan to go back. Again, let's say it like this. Okay, the most poskim still hold that you should keep 2 days. Those people today that keep 2 days in Eretz Yisrael basically hold like the Mishnah Brura, like the Aruch HaShulchan, Rav Yosef Karo, Moshe Feinstein also holds that way. Basically, what they hold is as long as you plan to go back to Chutzlaretz at some point in the near future, then you should keep 2 days.
Okay. To go back at some point during the Yom Tov.
No, at some point in general. You plan to go back, even in a year from now, you plan to go back, but that's your plan, is to go back.
To go back there and stay there permanently.
To go back to visit.
No, if you plan on living here and you plan to go back there to visit, that's a different story. We're talking about Dato Lachso means that your permanent living location is in the United States of America or in the United Kingdom, for example.
So some people plan on making Aliyah after they go through college in America.
That doesn't count. Right now they're still there. And even if you tell me they're planning on making Aliyah right now, some of us know better. It doesn't always happen. So, your assumption here is that unless you like made Aliyah already right now, then your assumption is that according to those posts, you should keep 2 days. The policy of MMY in general is to tell you that you should keep, and Rayliner, I'm assuming we'll discuss with you at some point a little more, and the policy is to keep, you should keep 2 days unless You got a specific sock from your rav beforehand that you should keep one day. So what's happened today, this is the historical point, again, fascinating, that over the past 20 years, somehow the Chacham Tzvi has made a comeback and has been steadily gaining power.
Yeah.
So this is my problem, okay? My problem is that, again, is there a legitimate shita that holds you keep one day? Yes. The Chacham Tzvi definitely held that way. And there are a few other poskim that held like the Chacham Tzvi as well, okay? But the majority held 2 days. So to come along and say, now we're going to bring in the Chacham Tzvi. So again, if you're a Rav and a Posek and you learn the Sugya and you felt, I really believe the Chacham Tzvi makes more sense, and I'm willing to argue against all the other Posekim that disagree, that, you know, somebody who has Smicha and is a Talmud Chacham has that right. For some, you know, Baal Bas to come along and say that is absolutely wrong. I think you can't do that. What you can do is if your Rav holds that you should keep one day in Israel, you can go to your Rav and ask him, what should I do? And if he tells you to keep one day, then that's already fine. But I'm afraid that, unfortunately, what's happening today, that the steadily growing phenomenon of people keeping one day in Israel is not only because they went to their Rav and their Rav told them to keep one day. I'm afraid that it's more an issue of convenience and feeling, well, if we're in Israel, we should do what the Israelis do, and they don't really understand there's a very long tradition of people that say to keep 2 days, and therefore I'm very hesitant about that. Okay, so I don't really like the phenomenon so much, but I see that it's happening, and just you should understand that they didn't base it on nothing. It's based on a very great tshuva here of the Chacham Tzvi, who obviously was a big Talmud Chacham and knew what he was talking about. Okay. Yeah.
On your family, the father asked the rabbi, and the rabbi said, no, it's not okay. So he keeps 2 days, and his wife completely refuses to keep a second day. They have flat hair.
Oh,
and
wow.
They cover all the chagim, and the baby will keep 1 day.
Oh, my gosh.
She makes some food for second day.
Wow. All right. So what can I tell you? You know, it's...
Where do my three coming for three things and owning an apartment come from?
So Rosh Hashanah Orbach has an idea, I think, that if you come for three chagim, then maybe it's ki'ilu, you live here. You live here during the chagim, so then you can keep 1 day. The apartment thing, I'm still not sure about. I saw it mentioned a little bit. It's
only land.
In my mind, the apartment is not good enough. In my mind, do you live here or do you not live here? So yes, if you're in an apartment, you could say you live here, but do you really live here? Is this your permanent living? Is this your permanent living location? The answer is usually not. I wouldn't be so into that. There are some posts that do allow it, though. I mean, they'll combine, they'll say, well, the Chacham Tzvi said 1 day, and it makes sense. And in addition to that, you also have an apartment, so maybe there's room to say you can keep 1 day, but...
What are the legitimate kulas in terms of people from Chutzah are and what they can have people from Eretz Yisrael do for them on second day?
So that's a whole other question. Yeah. They can do anything for you, but maybe you can't ask them.
Okay.
Again, that's probably a little
trouble. Could you get in the car with them?
Probably not. Some people do, probably not. I just have to mention one more point. There's one last sheet, and we'll end with this. There is a sheet called A Day and a Half. Anybody heard of that?
Yeah.
Okay. So that, I actually put on the sheet here. You can read the summary in English. I'm not going to read it now, but I'll just tell you what it is. It was Shmuel Salant, who was the Rav in Yerushalayim about 100 years ago. So he basically felt that the Chacham Tzvi was correct. He said it makes a lot of sense. That it's based on, you know, location. And the idea of making a bracha levatal when it's not warranted is, you know, you can't do. And, you know, if you're coming, the whole thing about Tosef, he says that makes sense. However, the problem is most of the posts disagree. So what did he say? He made a compromise. He said, let's say that really the Chacham Tzvi is right. So we're going to tell you that if you're here, that you're going to daven chol, you can wear chol clothing, etc., etc. But in deference to the poskim that held 2 days, we're going to tell you to be machmir, not to do malacha. So essentially what people that keep a day and a half, which is becoming, by the way, even more popular today as well, even people that don't keep 2 days, they keep this often. Their Soloveitchik apparently also felt that a day and a half was a good shot. Okay, so people that follow him and follow Lichtenstein and Gush also keep a day and a half. Essentially what they're doing is basically they hear Havdalah from an Israeli. They can wear chol clothing, they daven chol. If it's the last day of the Yom Tov, they'll put on tefillin if it's a male, etc., etc. But malacha they won't do. They won't turn on lights. Exactly. No, you don't keep the assays. You don't keep either one. You don't keep the assays. You don't have a suda.
No, but you don't do the low assays.
Right, but you don't do malacha. You don't do malacha. Okay.
But that doesn't make sense to me.
So it's basically,
if you really think that it's not hug,
it's trying to be safe.
It's essentially, that's exactly what it is. Essentially,
but
to be safe. It's a chumrah.
Safe because then you're not keeping assays. You're still.
But you don't have to. I mean, he feels the Chacham Tzvi is right. The problem is because to do malacha is in a serious Isra Darabanan, and there are so many posts that disagree, he basically wants to accommodate the majority opinion that feels that you shouldn't do malacha. It was a chumrah, and therefore tell you shouldn't turn on lights and you shouldn't carry or whatever,
so
any of those kinds of things.
Do that?
Nothing. No, you're definitely stuck in your house. You can walk outside, but. Maybe. And according to that, probably shouldn't get in the car either, though some are willing to be making on that.
Can you use your effort.
It's the same issue. Meaning if somebody else put it in for you, there are some rabbanim that will tell you that's okay. Personally, I'm not in favor of that, even for the 1.5 day people, but there are some, if you ask the right rav, they will tell you that because you're not doing anything yourself. So that's a larger question, which deals more with the issue of the sociology of Pesach, which we don't have time for now. And I'll be more than happy to sit and talk to you about that in the base measures, either during Morning Seder or Night Seder.